Hi, everybody, and welcome to Nintendo World Report Connectivity, episode 350.
Whoa, we didn't plan for this one.
Yeah, this show has been going on for more than a decade. It's weird. Maybe we'll do something more fun for 400, but 350 is just going to be our attempt at making a Game of the Year episode more than just two dudes reading lists.
Yes, because we did that last night.
Yeah, we did our, if you want to join our Patreon at patreon.com/NWR, you can listen to our, I believe it's probably going to clock in around 2.5-3 hours of deliberations to determine our, we had ranked top five games of the year, new games, and then top five ports and collections of the year. And then we had some honorable mentions. It's fun. Most of it's about Pokemon. But if you want to listen to that, just join the Patreon. I think as little as $1 a month can get you access to that.
If it's not up already, it will be up soon. I'm not sure if that'll go up before or after the actual awards go up.
But anyway, I'm Neil Ronahan, and joining me is John Raritan.
Howdy, everybody.
John, are you drinking anything right now?
I'm drinking a Coca-Cola.
I'm drinking a beer. So there's a brewery in Philadelphia called Yards Brewery, however, whatever it is. I went to the better liquor store near me, and they had, I posted a picture of it on Twitter. Maybe I'll try to dig it up for the purposes of this episode. And it basically was a variety pack of beer that was themed as if it was a Nintendo Power, like 1990s style, with like, there's a QR code. You can go to the strategy guide for the beer. It's called like the Rumble Pack or something like that. It's got like very much Nintendo Power ass font. The beers are pretty good. They're mostly IPAs, and I'm like, yeah, IPAs are fine, but not necessarily my preference. But all of the beers themselves are also, there's one that's like very a clear play on Donkey Kong. There's one, there's like a, it's like a black IPA that called Dr. Nocturnal, and it kind of looks like, you know, some kind of villain in a video game. But I am drinking, for the purposes of this, something that I will call out as 9.2% of alcohol. I've not had this one yet. It's called Very Mega. Very much Mega Man inspired. But we'll see what happens. It is an Imperial IPA.
You realize the Nintendo ninjas all listen to this podcast. Now they're going to come down on that brewery, DMCA.
I mean, Yards is like, they probably are not as far out as you. They might be national. They've always been a pretty good brewery too.
Yeah,
they had a spruce tip ale, because it's Philly, so it's all like Ben Franklin and shit.
Yeah,
but they had a spruce tip ale that I think they still have that I really, really liked. But anyway, that's beer talk. I feel like we haven't done beer talk, but I saw as I was getting ready for this episode, I saw that. I was like, well, this seems apropos.
Yeah. No, we'd ask them if they want to sponsor the show.
Yeah. They did like the tweet. I did tag them in it, so I was asking for it.
Begging for likes.
Yeah. So what we're going to do for this episode is we are going to get to some amount of our top games of the year. If you listen to last year's episode, you can hear John's live reaction when I'm just like, oh, I actually have a ranked 1-25 list. And he just had like 5 games total.
I have a habit of, I just scroll through my OpenCritic account and see what I played, because the odds of me playing something I didn't review are pretty low.
At this point, I think I've been doing it for 7 years, where as I play new games throughout the year, or at least new to me. So while Nintendo World Report, we do have some rules now in place of, like, you know, Mixalumia, a game that is on my list, that would technically qualify as a port in our parlance, since it is not a, you know, it is a game that came out on PC in I think 2020 or 2021. For me, it's just, if it's a game new to me, or like new to the console that I'm playing on, then I'll count it. And then if it's a game that's ported to Switch later, I will not count it on my list. But yeah, I've been doing it for a while, and I might not finish everything I play, but I play a lot of games. And actually, this list, looking at it, like, a lot of the ones that I haven't finished are games that I've put like 40 hours into. So, but before we get to that list, we're going to talk, we're looking at, we used to do awards with categories on the website, but they're very difficult to do for volunteer staff. So, and also like the pandemic, we did just like the year where it was unranked 10 games we loved, because it was 2020 and we wanted to be positive.
I did like that. Nobody watched it, but I did like
it. Yeah, I like the spirit of that idea. So what we're going to do is we are looking at the Nintendo Report 2019 Game Awards that we did, and we're going to go through those categories and come up with our own picks for those categories that we had.
On the spot, I'm assuming you haven't looked too deeply at them.
I just looked at the list. And we'll also, I guess we could also do this because I have it literally up. We can also talk about what our site-wide 2019 pick was for each category.
Oh, sure. Yeah, why not?
So let's start. The first one on this is, John, what's your biggest disappointment for 2022? And why is it Pokemon Scarlet and Violet?
Ooh, I don't, you know, this is going to sound really funny to anyone who does listen to our Patreon thing or to our Game of the Year discussions. I think I'm actually going to go with Splatoon because like Pokemon, while there are many things about it that disappointed me in its technical performance, like Pokemon still did some things I liked. It did a lot of things I like, whereas Splatoon 3 did literally nothing to make me want it. Like, I still bought Pokemon. I didn't even buy Splatoon.
I feel like if we were to do this, Splatoon 3 or Pokemon would probably win. For me, Splatoon 3 is definitely, like, on the short list. I think my pick would be... I think it's Mario Strikers.
That was... that I had that one in my head as well,
Switch Sports, close behind that. But I think... it's tough because I think that zooming out from a... how did they... fuck up a layup like Wii Sports on Switch, like that's more like I'm just baffled that like they just didn't stick the landing with it, whereas Mario Strikers is more personal, like I'm disappointed in how that game came out because I have historically really liked both arcade soccer games and Mario soccer games. I played a little bit of Mario Tennis Aces recently, largely because my four-year-old booted it up and then went online. but I think Mario Tennis Aces, like, it's, if you were to have told me a couple years ago, like, oh, there's gonna be a Mario soccer, tennis, and golf game, and you're probably gonna like the tennis game the most, I would be very confused, because I've always loved Mario golf games, I've always loved Mario soccer games. The tennis games have always been kind of like, well, you know, like they're fun and multiplayer, but I feel like and my opinion of Mario Golf Super Rush has gone up over time. I think the single player is disappointing, but I think the mechanic changes that they made are totally fine. And once they added more courses in the free DLC, I don't really have as many major complaints. Like the single player, I still finished, even if I was a little disappointed by
it. Sure. And even then, I still maintain that I think the single player is, while not where I want it to ultimately get to, I do feel like it's a step back toward what I want.
Yeah. And I would agree with that. I feel like you're just on like the glass half full, and I was the glass half empty with that single player.
Yeah, I'm just such a positive guy.
Yep. Looking at our 2019 Game Awards, Super Mario Maker 2 won, apt.
Yeah.
Fire Emblem Three Houses was a runner-up because of the structured story of it. And the last one was Soul Seraph, which I was basically the one behind that because Soul Seraph was sold as like an indie ActRaiser. Yeah. And I only have one sentence written for the runner-up thing, which the end result was okay, but what a colossal missed opportunity at a new ActRaiser-like game.
This, I forgot that this was the year that that our Game of the Year was also on the biggest disappointment list.
So next up, Most Wanted Switch Port.
Okay. I'm going to go... So I've been in a Witcher 3 mood with the update for Series X for that, which is excellent, by the way. So I'm playing a bunch of it both on Switch and on Series X. And I also went back and revisited Witcher 2 on backwards compatibility. That game was ported to 360, and it's a very good 360 port. They should port that to Switch.
I'm down.
Because they're remaking the first Witcher, but that's going to be like an Unreal Engine 5 game, and there's no way they're going to put it on Switch. So like, give us a consolation prize and put the 360 version of Witcher 2 on there.
I don't know if I have an answer for this. I feel like a lot of the Most Wanted Switch ports have come out.
Right, what's left?
I will say, we have five games on the list in 2019. None of these games are on Switch.
Ooh, I haven't even looked yet.
So the winner was Fire Emblem Genealogy of the Holy War.
Mm-hmm.
The runners up, Watam, which is a game that I definitely was behind, why that's on the list. That's the Keita Takahashi, the guy who made Katamari. I do think Watam is in the territory of it will probably never come out on Switch now because of everything that happened at that developer in the past year or so, which is a damn shame because I wish Watam was on Switch. Yakuza 0, not on Switch.
That one kind of, I mean, that is at least, you know, a more technically ambitious game.
Yeah. Metroid Prime Trilogy.
If you had asked me in 2019 if I honestly believed this wouldn't be on Switch in 2022, I would have absolutely not. Of course this will be on Switch by 2022.
Yep.
Why wouldn't it be?
Rhythm Heaven Mega Mix was the last one, which...
Yeah.
I don't know what's going to happen with Rhythm Heaven. I miss it.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess, like, the easy answer is Metroid Prime. Like, give me a Metroid Prime. But thinking a little bit, at least, like, more specific and demanding, but Terranigma.
Mm-hmm.
Enix, get off your ass. Give me my old Quintet trilogy. Like, Terranigma would be the solitary game, but you just do the whole trilogy. Break out Soul Blazer, Illusion of Gaia, and Terranigma. Bring those Enix Super Nintendo RPGs home again.
Now, of course, they would be required to be an HD 2D. Are you going to be okay with that?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, because that there's no way they're just going to put the Super Nintendo games on without doing them in HD 2D.
There was some more screens that, and there was a happy thing because I kind of forgot that it was coming. Suikoden 1 and 2.
Oh, yeah.
Like what they're doing with that, because that the remaster for that is more akin to what Square Enix is doing with the Final Fantasy VII, or the Final Fantasy, just the Final Fantasy pixel remaster games, where it's not necessarily HD 2D or anything, but they are like deepening and cleaning up the older sprites, which that's kind of what I want more out of these.
Yeah, this looks way better than HD 2D.
Yeah. And I've never really played a Suikoden game that long before.
Yeah.
I think I've messed around with them over the years, but I've never like done a sincere, thorough playthrough.
Yeah.
Next up, best moment.
Best moment. What happened this year? My gut reaction is the kid talking about Bill Clinton at the Game Awards. And not specifically that kid, but the look of sheer terror on Keeley's face as he walked out afterwards and just kind of went, okay, I guess that's the end of the show. That was beautiful. I like any moment in the Game Awards where I can tell that Keeley is uncomfortable is great. Same with when Christopher Judge made an 8-minute speech and they added music, but it just made the speech more dramatic and he just leaned into it. Oh,
good for him.
High art.
It's like, dude saw a weakness that they weren't going to take him off the stage and just went for it.
Nobody, have you seen Christopher Judge in comparison to any other human being on the planet? Like, the man is a mountain. Like, no security guards at the Game Awards are going to be able to forcibly remove him from the stage. So he's safe. He is sturdy. He ain't going nowhere. He can make as long of a speech as he wants to.
I'm now like glancing at like, I know my Chrono Cross coming to Switch is the best moment for me.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, are there any like were outside like to, I mean, that was a very specific one to me because I had heard a little bit that it was a possibility. I didn't think it was coming as soon as it was.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the kind of thing that like I never heard it definitively. And the fact that Radical Dreamers came with it is amazing.
I will throw out one other one, actually, that I had forgotten about, was the moment of when Xenoblade 3 went from being out in September to out tomorrow. Like, that was pretty cool when it was just suddenly like, we're advancing this game by like 3 months. That was awesome.
And some other things that I'll just kind of, I don't know if, I guess, you know what, GoldenEye coming to NSO is still really cool. Theater Rhythm coming back, Breath of the Wild, or Tears of the Kingdom. I was about to say Breath of the Wild 2. Mm-hmm. Tears of the Kingdom finally getting a name and a release date. For worst moment, I would say Tears of the Kingdom getting delayed to 2023, and also Metroid Prime nothing.
Yes.
That would be worst moment for me.
I think technically Metroid, didn't they like wasn't there a moment in which they definitively said it wasn't going to be in 2022? Like, that's kind of the closest thing we've had for news from it in a while, is a negative confirmation. I thought there was some moment in which they said it won't be out this year.
When Dread was announced, they said it was in development still. And I think that's the last public comment about Metroid Prime.
Okay.
Because, like, when they announced Dread, they said, like, I think it was Tanabe leading the announcement. And he was like, yeah, so we're working hard at Metroid Prime, but now we have this game coming out this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? We didn't do awards last year. Best moment, Metroid Dread.
Yeah, just the release, the announcement, the playing it. Playing it again.
Best moment for 2019, Banjo and Kazooie and Smash Brothers Ultimate. Runner up, Ring Fit Adventure announcement and the Breath of the Wild 2 announcement. Just,
hey, it's
funny.
Been a while.
Yeah.
That was a good announcement.
Best DLC or update?
Ark Survival Evolved. They made the worst game ever ported to Switch into one of the better Switch ports.
Mario Kart Easy. 8 Booster Pass. I think that's probably best DLC or update. I don't think, I mean, Xenoblade 3, like, it's more the game is awesome. The DLC that they put out this year is like, it was fine.
Oh, it's middling.
The character is okay. I have swimsuits now.
Yeah, which is great.
Related to Mario Strikers, I did that, like, setting the odds for the DLC characters. It's the kind of thing where I both want to take credit for it, and also I don't think it was that hard, but pretty much the ones that have been announced as DLC, and that, well, I think they're all out now, were the ones with the shortest odds.
Like, yeah.
I'm feeling real smug about that. Boo and Birdo would be the next two.
Yeah.
I think they added Birdo already.
You should post that as if it's a leak. Like, just say, like, our sources say, and then when it's inevitably right, people be like, whoa, they knew. The ninjas start panicking. It'd be great.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Mario Kart DLC, like, it's very good.
Yeah, especially I've really, like, the tracks that are either, you know, hitting that and tour at pretty much the same time, or like the stuff that's hit that a little before tour, like that stuff is cool. Like, having legitimately new tracks has been cool. Except for the ice cream one. That wasn't a very good track, but it was new. So that was neat.
Our 2019 picks were Starlink Crimson Moon.
That was a good one because it had no reason to exist outside of contractual agreements that I assume already existed.
Yep. And was probably where Star Fox Grand Prix came from.
If that was ever a thing, I think the racing in this was a coincidence.
I think Star Fox Grand Prix, I think someone probably saw a screen of this and was like, oh, is that that Grand Prix game? Like, whatever, there will be a Did You Know Gaming video about it.
Right, it'll get taken down. Give it time. Yeah.
Horizon Chase Turbo Summer Vibes was another one. And then Joker in Smash Brothers. Next up, best Nintendo Switch Online game. The winner in 2019 was Star Fox 2. Runners-up, Joy Mech Fight and Stunt Race FX.
Was Beyond Oasis added this year, or was that already in the initial pack?
I think it was added this year.
If that was it, then I'm choosing that one because I actually played all the way through that one and had a great time.
Here, let's look to see what was new.
That was in September. Yeah.
NES, Earthbound, Beginnings, Dig Dug 2, Mappy Land, Pinball, and Diva Story 6, Imperial of Nisarcia. No, none of those. Super Nintendo, Earthbound, Earthworm Jim 2, Harvest Moon.
Harvest Moon is on NSO? Is that on Japanese only?
Only Japanese. Okay,
oh, okay.
Yeah. No, I was like,
why
closer.
Haven't I been playing that?
Part of the reason, I also saw Yumihari Kawase was also on NSO. I was like, really? But it's only in Japanese. Nothing really. There's other games on Super Nintendo, but okay. So N64, there were a lot more. It's a good lineup, but I don't think there's anyone that I'm like, oh my God, it came out finally. Cause you do have, Banjo-Kazooie's cool that it's there. Majora's Mask, F-Zero X, Kirby 64, Pokemon Snap.
Banjo-Kazooie is exceptionally cool. Ever-Oasis I like just because I got to discover a game that I hadn't played through before. But Banjo-Kazooie, that's great.
Yeah,
they should have more of those rare games.
call out Mega Man the Wily Wars on Genesis. The fact that that's on the service is really cool.
Yes, if don't you want to play it.
Yeah, if you want to play bad versions of Mega Man games, yeah, they're right there.
Yep.
But I'll give the shout out to Pokemon Puzzle League, because that's a game that hasn't been accessible in a while, and it's a very good puzzle game.
Yeah.
Let's go best retro re-release. Atari 50.
I'm trying to find anything else to add.
Or Cowabunga Collection, which just had some updates announced, none of which I care about, but it's just a lot, adding a lot more options to the game, like another games online. Like, that's cool.
Does Pac-Man World Repack count as a retro re-release?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Final Fantasy VII is on this list, so...
Okay. Yeah, the Pac-Man World Repack, in which I am the only person in the Accolades trailer, because I was the only Accolade. You were
the Accolade.
Yes.
I'm also Chrono Cross, contractually obligated to say that, since I adore that game. But Atari 50 is the coolest retro release of the year.
You cannot argue with Atari 50.
Our winner back then was another Digital Eclipse game. It was Disney's Aladdin and Lion King, which was a precursor of how good they were gonna do with Atari 50, because that had a lot of cool videos and stuff.
And this was before they even had the SNES Aladdin added to it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I am a sucker for Genesis Aladdin. I really like Genesis Aladdin. I don't hate Super Nintendo Aladdin. And really, it comes down to the fact of I owned one of those games as a child. You can say whatever abuse my parents gave me, because they only gave me access to Genesis Aladdin. but I like it's one of those things that, like, I have a preference. It's Genesis Aladdin, largely because I played it as a child. But both games are very good.
I do want to point out that for some ungodly reason, the write-up for Final Fantasy VII was written by me.
Yeah, yeah, I was very confused at that.
That somebody must have not got the write-in.
Yeah, and the runners no up for way. That. Final Fantasy VII and Castlevania Anniversary Collection.
Yeah.
I'd say we're due in 2023 for the Castlevania DS games to hit. Let's get ready.
It sure won't be Symphony of the Night. They could add the N64 games to NSO if they.
Oh, that'd be cool. That would be awesome. I think those games are hot trash, but absolutely, I want them playable.
Yeah,
on
I want them. Yes, yeah, exactly.
Because I don't think I think they're kind of bad, but I think they're very interesting.
I've always heard the second N64 one was significantly better, and I've never played it.
Yeah, like the first one is like, what if Mario 64 was shitty? Like, that's kind of what Castlevania 64 is, where they're like, they're taking this 2D game and bringing it to 3D. What if it turned out that when you did that, the game was terrible? Mm-hmm. It is academically fascinating, because it is it is just that thing of like, oh, like Nintendo could have fucked this up.
Yeah, it's not as easy as it looks.
Next one is best third party developer / publisher. Our winner in 2019 was Koei Tecmo, I think largely because they made all of Nintendo's games.
Yes.
Runner-up was Devolver Digital.
It's fair.
Yeah.
I feel like this year, unless you can think of something else, I kind of feel like it has to be Square Enix.
That's what I was going to say. Like, for me, it's hands down, it's Square Enix.
Yeah.
Even glancing at my list as far as maybe Annapurna.
Sure.
They did put out Neon White, and I can't think of any other games that they put out, but I'm sure they put out other good games.
Yeah.
Yeah, like there's nothing else. Like, there's definitely, as far as more than one game, I can't think of too many that came out. For the lulls, Sony.
Ooh.
Ooh. for MLB the Show.
Yeah.
Because that, you know what? MLB the Show, a very good game.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think it's Square Enix hands down.
Yeah. They went, was Kingdom Hearts this year, or was that last year?
I think that was it might have been the beginning of this year.
Yeah, because they did they recovered very. They had that stint of Guardians of the Galaxy and Kingdom Hearts were both cloud titles.
Yeah,
and then they were like, never mind, and suddenly got really good at porting stuff to Switch.
Yeah, I mean, if you just, it's one of the things where I don't know if any of the games that they released would be like game of the year quality. I mean, I do love me some Chrono Cross, but. Like, it's more the breadth of everything, like Nier Automata, Tactics Ogre, Crisis Core, Dragon Quest Treasures, Harvestella. And that's just like a 6 week period.
Yeah. Yeah. We could probably talk about like their marketing and PR strategies for releasing all their games on the same day, but.
And there were some duds. Chocobo GP did come out this year.
And it dies this year.
As it should. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you totally fumble the monetization strategy for your full price video game.
Yep. Yeah, you feel bad for that, because that was definitely some higher up making a decision they didn't understand.
Yeah, because it was an okay game that was completely ruined by the fact that the DLC was season pass based and very expensive.
Yep.
Although I did hear in later seasons they kind of course corrected a little bit, but
too little too late.
That was 2 or 3 months after launch, and yep. You had lost me already.
Yep.
So the next one is Best Story. Our winner in 2019, Untitled Goose Game, runners-up, Pikuniku, and Dig Dog.
What a great lineup.
That I could tell this is why we stopped doing categories.
Yep. It's horrible and the best thing ever at the same time.
It's Xenoblade 3.
Well, that's the thing. I want to say Xenoblade. Can I say the first 6 chapters of Xenoblade 3 are the best story of the year?
Sure. As far as just games that I think had very good stories that came out this year, Kirby and the Forgotten Land, like, sincerely.
Yeah.
I don't think I would call that best story, but I think it's a good story. Enjoyable, even. Like, there's a lot of background storytelling to that game. There's a straight up a made up language in which they sing songs in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's cool as shit. Pokemon Scarlet and Violet would probably, I mean, Xenoblade still would get it for me, even if I wind up hating the finale. But Pokemon Scarlet and Violet has one of the best endings in a Pokemon game that I've ever played.
Sure.
And I think it's a little slow and overwritten, but it's also for children, so I can, you know, give context to that. But I can't think of any other games that would really, Harvestella Goes Places. But it's very, very overwritten. Like, there is a streamlining that game. That story might be like Subversive and Brilliant, but it takes too long to get there.
Aztec Forgotten Gods was this year. That has a really, really, really good story. No matter what you think,
I forgot that game came out this year.
Yeah, like the story was incredible. Yeah, like the story is probably the best part of that game. It's super well written. And is very endearing. Slow start, but it goes places. It takes some twists.
Best art?
Not Pokemon.
I kind of want to say Shredder's Revenge or Shovel Knight Dig, which I think also shows that I like pixel games.
It's almost like two different questions. Yeah. Like, 3D, I might say Kirby.
It is a very good looking game.
It'd be Kirby or Xenoblade, but I'm not actually a huge fan of all of the art in Xenoblade 3. I think some of the characters are pretty boring.
That's what I was thinking a little bit, is that, like, I think the scale of Xenoblade 3 is still impressive, but from a raw art level.
Yeah, like, we're talking about art, not graphics, you know? Yeah. So it's...
Or I could just go from left field and say Dorf Romantic.
There you go.
Which is it's just a serene, beautiful game. That's the one that is basically Carcassonne, the single player game on Switch. Very, very good.
My from left field one will be Astro Dogs, which is all
that has a good
vaporwave puppies. Yeah.
Yeah. Best art went to The Tourist.
Yeah.
And then Children of Morta and Pikuniku.
All totally fair picks.
Best graphics. Luigi's Mansion 1 in 2019 with Link's Awakening EU. And Yoshi's Crafted World following it up.
I would have... I guess the runners-up aren't ranked. Luigi's Mansion was the right pick for that year.
Forgotten Land.
Yeah, once again, Forgotten Land or Xenoblade. I'd feel more comfortable with Xenoblade this time because I do think, like, graphically it's more successful than it is artistically. But I'd probably still go with Kirby.
Best music. Our winner in 2019, Astral Chain, runners-up, Cadence of Hyrule, Sayonara Wild Hearts, and Fire Emblem Three Houses. Oh, and also Luigi Mansion 3.
Astral Chain was probably me pushing for it, though Matt wrote it.
Yeah.
So maybe Matt pushed. Cadence of Hyrule is a awesome soundtrack. That's Xenoblade.
Yeah.
Easy.
Although I would give some credit to, I mean, Shovel Knight Dig, it's got, I believe Jake Kaufman is on the music for that one again. It's fantastic.
Pokemon Scarlet and Violet also, honestly, really good soundtracks. Yeah.
It's funny. I was looking at something where Toby Fox clarified what music he did, and all of the music that he did is the stuff that I'm like, that's incredible.
Yeah, I suspect that, like, I haven't looked at his track list, but there's stuff in there that sounds distinctly kind of different.
Yeah.
And I suspect it's all of his stuff.
I believe, like, I think the field theme is like a remixed version of a song that he did. Terror Raid Battle, I believe, was also him. And
that one's
when
great.
You get to the crater near the end of the game, he I believe he did the song for that, which is like hauntingly beautiful.
Yeah, that game's whole soundtrack is really and Pokemon always has good soundtracks, but that one is exceptionally good.
Arceus also had a really good soundtrack too.
Yes, it did.
Kirby and the Forgotten Land, I think, would be on the outside looking in on this for me, but that's also notable.
And Curse to Golf had an awesome soundtrack. I don't know how much of that you played to hear
good.
The music, but really good chiptune soundtrack.
I wish the game itself clicked with me better.
You should go back. They've made some adjustments as far as like the bosses go and stuff. It might be worth revisiting sometime.
Probably. Best port. Our winner, which feels apt considering your most wanted port, was Witcher 3, which is a miracle port.
Yeah.
Runner-up, Cuphead and Castlevania Collection.
I will say it's been nice because I'm so used to playing Witcher 3 on Switch, which runs at 30 frames per second, ideally. It's been really nice going to the update for Series X because the ray trace mode is locked to 30 instead of 60. And I'm like, that's fine. That's what I'm used to. It feels weird when I play it at 60. So thanks, Switch version of Witcher 3, for lowering my expectations. I'm going to say No Man's Sky for this one.
Chrono Cross, I feel, once again, contractually obligated to mention it. But Portal the Companion Collection is a really impressive pair of ports.
I need to actually pick those up.
I need to finish Portal 2. Because I like blazed through Portal 1 and like was like, oh my god, this is as incredible. I played it with the director's cut commentary too.
Commentary, every game, if you've never played the Valve games that have commentary on them, it's like as you're playing through, there's like these little floating things you can interact with that just start a segment of commentary relevant to wherever you are. And like occasionally they'll like take control of the camera and show you something that like you can't actually see while you're playing. And it's incredible, and every game should do it. It's so cool. I went through all of those on the orange box. They also have those for Half-Life 2, and they're just so awesome. But mostly No Man's Sky, just because the port is very impressive. It's one of those games that just shouldn't really run on Switch, so it's just an impressive port from that perspective. Yeah, but then also I love that game.
Best party / multiplayer, which I honestly don't feel qualified to really speak to anymore.
Well, it ain't Pokemon.
I don't play local multiplayer games as much. I don't have parties. It's partially COVID, partially having children.
Yeah, the only multiplayer game I've been playing a lot of this year has been It Takes Two, which is not a game from though it did come out this year on Switch.
It did, yeah.
But I heard that version had some issues, but maybe I'll still say that. And I get you. How about, does Skywalker Saga count?
Yeah, go for that.
Sure.
I don't know, man. So our winners back in 2019, as I stall for time, Killer Queen Black, Duck Game, and Heave Ho, which honestly, three banger picks. Killer Queen Black, RIP. The online server is being taken down, if it hasn't already. But Duck Game, I actually did crack out this year. I love that game.
Heave Ho is delightful.
I forgot it's that so I have this turn of phrase may be apt to repeat now. Times have changed for me as I've gotten older. I used to get together with friends for far more often. We all used to be younger and more liable to pound caffeine and play the snot out of silly local multiplayer games. Duck Game is something that just exudes the feeling of snorting Mountain Dew while inhaling a pixie stick with friends. It might be one of the more technical games that might also be closer to tripping on cocaine.
Yeah,
I did. So we saw Duck Game at a PAX East before it came out. They gave us there's because one of the great things about Duck Game is that there is a dedicated button to quacking. So at the press event, they gave out duck buttons that, you know, you press the, it's like the a button that makes noise. We have that. My kids found it recently, much to my wife's chagrin.
Oh no.
I love it because it makes me think of Duck Game, and I love Duck Game.
Well, I'm happy you love it.
Yeah.
How does your wife feel about it?
She does not. The kids also love it, so 3 out of 4 ain't bad.
Yeah. She's outvoted.
Nobody Saves the World. That had decent co-op. I didn't play as much. Wait, I need to confirm. I believe, yeah, Nobody Saves the World did have co-op, because I think it has online that I did not play. But it's a very good game. I want to mention it.
Yeah, there you go. That works.
And also, Kirby's fine. Best online.
Oh man,
Tetris 99 was the winner. Killer Queen Black and Duck Game were the runners up.
Okay, what from this year has online that you would consider functional? Because whatever that is, it wins. It ain't Pokemon and it ain't Splatoon. I can tell you that.
Shredder's Revenge.
There you go. I was going to say, for all the problems with Mario Strikers, all of my online matches went perfectly fine.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? I'll give the credit to Mario Strikers in that it is a shame that I didn't want to play it anymore, but it ran online fine.
Yeah, I didn't like that you couldn't have 4 people together. Like, it was 2v2, even though there were 4 people on the team. But, like, it ran. So, there you go.
And Switch Sports might be lacking a variety, but I had some pretty good matches of soccer. I think that the concept of the bowling mode is okay, even if it's annoying when, like, you're like, I'm going to play a regular game of bowling, and they're like, no, you're not. And then you get like wacky bowling or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. So we had now we are done with the actual awards. And I don't think we did have best Nindie of the year.
Oh, no, I thought I had got Mextermination Force into number 1 just because it's at the top of the page. And I was so excited for 2019, John. Well, good job, John. You still got it to 5th.
But let's I guess now let's get to our lists. So how long is yours?
Hang on. I've been adding things to it as we go. I have 13 things. They are not in order, but I have 13 things.
Okay. So then I guess what? I'll do 3 at a time early on and then maybe go to 2. I don't know.
Are you you're 25, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you do 2 at a time and you should be okay.
Yeah. Or maybe if I do 23, 24, and 25 to start, because then we'll just be 2 for 1 the rest of the way.
Yeah. Yeah, you just go through 3 right away.
Okay.
We're also gonna have overlap, which is gonna screw everything up.
Or you know what? So what, you have 13?
I have 13.
I'm gonna rapid fire go through 25 to 14.
Do it right now.
All right. A Leckhead, number 25. It's pretty good. 2D and Top D feel very similar to a Leckhead. There's a reason they're next to each other on the list. A Little to Left, the Indie World Shadow Drop from November. A really good puzzle game. Fishing Paradiso, a game that came about back in June.
I need to play that.
It is just like a really chill fishing game with pixel art and a very heartwarming story. I still need to go back and play that developer's previous game, Bear's Restaurant. Number 21, Tunic. It's fine. Number 20, Sonic Frontiers. It's a game that I enjoy, but I also think is garbage, I'm a man of very complicated feelings. Number 19, Nobody Saves the World. A game that the longer that I played it, the less I liked it, but I thought it was like 10 out of 10 amazing to start. So by the end of the game, I was like 7-8 range, and it was still very memorable. Retro Bowl at number 18. It's a port of a mobile game that's basically just Tecmo Bowl with a little bit of a season franchise mode in it. Very clever. I had a joy spending like 10 hours playing it over the course of like a week or so, and then I put it down because I feel like I played all that game had to offer. Number 17, Mario and Rabbids Sparks of Hope. It's very good. Number 16, Harvestella. Might be sensing a trend that games that I feel similar about or played around the same time and felt about the same about are grouped together. that is my Harvest Cell and Mario and Rabbids Sparks of Hope, in that I went from one to the other and had a pretty good time with both of them. Number 15, Vampire Survivors. That game is electric. Number 14, Pick-Pack-Pup. The only playdate on my playdate game on my list. It's a very cute puzzle game. And my number 13, MLB The Show 22. An astoundingly good port of a very demanding and complex baseball game.
Yeah, that's just one of those games that it's cool that it exists.
Yeah, and like I mean, it did not make the top 10, but it's 13th for me. There's a lot of good games came out this year. So what is your number 13?
All right, I very quickly organized these loosely, but I do not stick to any of this order. I had 13 was Aztec Forgotten Gods, which is a very flawed semi-open world action-adventure game that has a really cool story, cool art design, and just a cool hook of essentially you have a jetpack hand and you fly around fighting Aztec gods in a cyberpunk Aztec city. And that's just a cool concept. it's from Lienzo. They're the guys that did Mulaka, which was another game that I liked a couple years back. It's a cool game. Definitely not, like, I wouldn't put it in my top 10, but it deserves mention.
My number 12 is Fire Emblem Three Hopes. Maybe the best Musou game I've ever played. I think I like Age of Calamity more, the Hyrule Warriors game that came out in 2020, but that's because I like Zelda more. I think I described my fandom for Fire Emblem like my fandom for Pokemon, where I play all of the games, but I wouldn't say I'm really that passionate about the depths that the hardcore fans are. So I enjoyed, like, it was nice hanging out with these characters again, and being able to cut out the first half of the game, essentially, because Three Hopes largely takes place in the second half of Three House, the alternate reality of the second half of Three Houses.
It's a lot of qualifiers.
Oh my god, it's mind-boggling trying to sort this out, but I like that game a lot. It's a very good Musou game.
My number 12 is the report of Ark, which, if somehow you missed it, it was that Grove Street Games went and just ported Ark to Switch again. They were not the people who originally ported it to Switch, but they just went in and started from, I believe, the Xbox One version and just made a brand new Switch port that released as a free update to just replace the old version of the game. And it went from being borderline unplayable, a game that I believe I gave a 2 out of 10 when it initially released, to a game where I still am not a huge fan of Ark as a game, but as a port, this is remarkable. It is one of the better looking Switch games now, which is just a crazy story. And I also think it's just cool from the perspective that Grove Street Games, their thing before this was the Grand Theft Auto trilogy.
Yeah, which so really shows it, that they probably had no budget and no time.
Yep, yeah, it's a cool example of, like, yeah, it's when stuff like that happens, it's rarely the actual developers that are the problem. It's probably the case that they were not given the resources or time or money or whatever that they needed. Yeah. So just a nice redemption story for them that I like.
And number 11 for me is Dorf Romantic, which I mentioned it earlier. It is single player Carcassonne the video game. Just like you have tiles, you build your countryside, there's different goals that will pop up. There's a lot of different biomes that you go through. A lot of very nice visual tweaks and everything. It is very much more a toy than a game, but it was one of the more mesmerizing games that I played this year.
My number 11 is Wavetale, which is a game that I actually teased like 2 weeks ago that I wasn't allowed to talk about yet. And then we didn't do an episode the following week. So I kind of felt bad that I teased it and then never went there. But it's a cool adventure game, I guess, where the whole hook is that you can just surf along the surface of the water. You have this creature that mirrors all of your movements underwater. So you can just walk on the surface and you're like walking on its feet. It's very strange, but it's got a cool story and just really great vibes. The Switch version has some performance issues that, realistically, looking back on my review, I probably should have been more harsh on, but I just had a happy time playing it and I liked it a whole lot. Now, it has a really cool soundtrack too, like kind of lots of like saxophone vibes, but very chill, and I like it a lot.
My number 10, Mixolumia, which is a puzzle game that came out on Switch back in August. It is, you know, a Falling Black puzzle game, but the hook with it is that it's, instead of like going to a flat point at the bottom, it is like the board is kind of shaped like a diamond, so you go to a point. So the way, like, as blocks fall, they spread out in kind of like, it's predictable, but it's more chaotic. Another game that, once again, going in with the theme that a lot of the games that I like that are similar are grouped together. You could look through this list, pair games off, and be like, okay, these are the chill puzzle games. Another game that I wish there was a little bit more content. You can read my review up on the site for more details on Mixolumia. But the basic idea of the game is still one that I occasionally go back to just because it's such a chill experience.
My number 10, keeping with the puzzle game theme, is Mini Motorways, which I think is my favorite puzzle game on Switch. It's just a traffic management simulator where you have houses and businesses, and you have to make people be able to get to the businesses they want to be able to get to. And it's constantly adding more houses and more businesses, so you're like laying out road tiles and making highway bypasses and setting up stop signs and stoplights and roundabouts and all kinds of things. And it's like, it's a high score. Like, you don't win, though I have seen very smart people on the internet who make like perfect layouts that can just play themselves forever. But yeah, it's just a high score game where you're always eventually going to lose. But I find it very enjoyable and somehow not stressful, despite looking like a very stressful game.
I don't think I ever played Motorways. I did play Mini Metro, which,
yeah,
I thought was like, I think it's the kind of thing where it is not totally my type of puzzle game.
Mm-hmm.
Like one that I respected, but did not get as deep into.
Yeah. Yeah, that's totally fair.
Number 9 is, I guess, my highest non-Nintendo game. I will say, in general, and I think it's going to show up on your list, so maybe I'll just stop talking about it. But my number 9 is Point B, which was a Netflix mobile game that came out in June. It is by the guy who made Downwell, and it is basically like Downwell, but instead of like the kind of grungy, like old school pixel art vibe of Downwell, this is a bright, colorful game where instead of going down, you're going up. Just really like incredible. Very much designed for mobile touchscreens, works very well like that. This is a game that I believe it was put out by Devolver Digital, depending on the exclusivity with Netflix on their mobile game stuff. I would assume Point B will probably come to Switch eventually. And when it does, like, check it out, because it is just a breath of fresh air.
What number are we on? 9? My number 9 is Curse to Golf, which is a Chuhai Labs roguelike golf game. It's very, very difficult. Like, it's one of the more difficult roguelikes I've played. But it's a really cool concept. I love 2D golf games. I'm very bad at 3D golf, but I really enjoy 2D golf. And the whole concept is that you died in a golfing accident, and now you need to escape golf purgatory by defeating all of the other golfers in golf purgatory.
Did you actually get through it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's hard. It took me a while. I hadn't finished it when I wrote the review. I'll admit that. But yeah, it's difficult. The nice thing, I could be wrong. I think in a later update, they made it so that when you beat a boss, they stay dead.
Okay.
Which helped. I don't think it was like that when it first came out, but honestly, like when I very first came out, it was kind of glitchy, so it's hard for me to remember what the actual functionality of the game was. But yeah, so that makes it a lot more friendly of like, once you've done a boss golf battle, then you still have to replay their world, like get through a few courses in their world, but you won't have to fight them again, which makes it like way a much faster like going back through old worlds, which I appreciate. But it is admittedly like an extremely punishing roguelike, just one that happened to click with me because of what it was.
My number eight is a donut making puzzle game from Quantum Astrophysicist Guild, Freshly Frosted. An incredible puzzle game, because it's basically you're like setting up a line through a factory to like have, you know, the sprinkles and the frosting put on the donuts and have them delivered in the right order. Very mentally twisty. Incredible. And I'll use this to call out a game that I feel like, for GOTY purposes, Nintendo's like indie holiday house thing is awful for that, because they're shadow dropping two games a day for I think the entire week. The game that came out the day that we're recording, which I've not played yet but look forward to, is another Quantum Astrophysicist Guild game, although Freshly Frosted was internally developed there. This is a, you know, a game they're publishing called Sailforth, that is a proc gen sailing game that I'm really looking forward to seeing more of. I played a demo a while ago and it was very buggy, but the idea of it did kind of seem like it's like Sea of Thievesy, but that's like a roguelike, like single. It might be a roguelike. I'm not sure if it's a roguelike or not. I don't want
to. It's, listen, if you don't know, it's probably safer to say that something is a roguelike than it
is. But it is a procedurally generated sea that you sail around with islands and junk. Seems fun.
Yeah, I am super interested in that game.
Yeah, and I think that it's been in development for like 6 years. Like, so
really, yeah, I saw a tweet from the developer today about it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I remember it was back when I went to events, was when I played a demo of it.
Right. So at least 3 years ago.
I think it might have been 2019 when I played a demo for it, because I think it might have been right when Quantum Astrophysicist Guild had signed it. But yeah, Freshly Frosted is incredible. You can check out my review.
Cool. My number eight is Bayonetta 3, which I haven't finished yet. But I like it. It's no Bayonetta 2 for my money, but the Bayonetta formula and gameplay, I think, is solid enough that you can fall back a little bit from the height of Bayonetta 2 and still have just an all-time banger of a game. Honestly, my biggest complaint is just that the new character, Viola, I don't think she's fun to play as.
That's what I've heard. And
Bayonetta, it's great.
Yeah, as I hear people, it's like Bayonetta, but not as fun to play as. I'm like, then why the fuck did they do it?
Yeah, because conceptually it's the idea that for her, rather than dodging things to get into Witch Time, you have to counter them to get into Witch Time. But the counter window is, I just can't, and this may be user error, but I just can't find the timing of the counter window. And listen, I'm somebody that plays a lot of Souls likes. I feel like I'm decent at nailing counter window timing, and I cannot get it in Bayonetta 3. Maybe I'm just terrible at it, but yeah, it just, something feels off about it. But when you're not her, great game. And if she wasn't in the game, it then would be better than Bayonetta 2. But really, really drags it down.
My number seven game, Shovel Knight Dig, came out in September. Made by Yacht Club and Nitro. I'm honestly not sure how to pronounce their name, but I was looking forward to this game when it was first announced, but a little bit like, are we kind of hitting too much Shovel Knight? And then I played this game, and it's you know, it basically Shovel Knight meets Spelunky, and it works really, really well. It is the kind of thing that, like, when I have an urge to play Shovel Knight, this is probably the game that I'll go to, just because it kind of delivers that feeling in more bite-sized bursts. And it is, you know, roguelike design and everything. But it does one of those cool things where you have player choice. So after the first world that you go through, you usually have a choice between going to one of two different biomes after that. Which I like that, because then if there's like one area that you're like, well, this is a pain in the ass, you don't need to go to the fire area, for example. Very good. Like that game a lot.
I bought that and I haven't booted it yet, but I really want to play it. I just haven't had time. It looks awesome.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know if they're adding DLC for that. They might be. But either way, the game stands alone as it is.
Yeah. It's Shovel Knight. So if there isn't, like, if they don't expand the game by like 75%, then I don't even, how is it even a Shovel Knight game? They've set the bar very high.
I really, now that they're kind of, I mean, they have Mina the Hollower, which I think that's coming out next year. They also are apparently working on another new game that I'm really looking forward to see what they do next, because they kind of are, you know, like, it's weird to think of them possibly not working on a Shovel Knight game, considering they've been doing it for like a decade now.
They've teased the concept of Shovel Knight 64.
I don't know if they've done that recently.
Yeah, I just want that. I'm a big, I really like 3D platformers. And I think that sounds awesome.
And it is a kind of thing where I think that it's much, we'll talk about another developer that I feel like is just like in line with what I want out of certain types of games. The fact that Yacht Club Games were like, yes, we want a Wario's Woods Shovel Knight game, mm-hmm. shows that it's just a bunch of people making games for me. So I would like to see their take on Shovel Knight 64, because I would probably like it very much.
My number seven, speaking of 3D platformers, is Lunistus.
I was very curious about that one.
Great, like very short, but just great kind of quick paced 3D platformer. Weird thing about this one, I started following this game on Twitter because at the time it was a Star Fox-like. And then the developer did, I think, some sort of 48-hour game jam where they made a 3D platformer to take a break. And then the 3D platformer just sort of took over, and that became what Lunistus was. And I think they still have the Star Fox-like as a separate project. but given how well Lunistus did, I don't know if they'll go back to it or not. But Lunistus is incredible, so like that's fine. Grumpy Fox, if you're listening to this, please still finish the Star Fox-like. I want to play it. It looked cool. I think I even played a demo of it, and it was great. But yeah, just a really solid, once again, kind of like a vaporwave themed, like lots of pastel colors, kind of a lo-fi PS1 looking 3D platformer with like lots of collectibles to go back for replay value to get perfect scores on levels. Simple, fun, awesome game.
I feel like we haven't gotten, I feel like our top six here are probably going to be a lot of.
My next one is on your list. So.
Is it Pokemon Legends Arceus?
No, I forgot to put that one on here. So you're safe.
Pokemon Legends Arceus is my number six. A game that I'm honestly surprised dropped this far. Because, naturally, it was kind of occupied that top spot for a long time. Because this game started off the year with a bang. And by no means do I think it's a bad game. Because it's only the sixth best game of the year by my metrics. But I definitely have talked about this game a lot. You can check out my review. I think I might have. It's more seeing what Game Freak did after Pokemon Legends Arceus and Scarlet and Violet. I really want them to fuse the two ideas of those and have it run on, actually run on the hardware. But Arceus is really special in how it really does. It takes it back to square one and kind of reinvents what a Pokemon game is. And it really, it is fascinating that there is even a debate as to whether or not Arceus is a mainline or not a mainline Pokemon game. I think judging after seeing Scarlet and Violet, like, I think Arceus was a side project. But, I mean, we'll see. But we'll see what the future brings.
Yeah, I think based on Scarlet and Violet, I think it's clear that Arceus was very much, I don't know what of Arceus influenced Scarlet and Violet and what of Scarlet and Violet influenced Arceus, but like, they're very clearly working along the same goal. Like they're coming at it from different angles, but I agree with you that I really hope the next one just takes both. Cause if you take the catching from Arceus and the battling and like auto battle systems from Scarlet and Violet, and then create a game that can boot successfully, like you've got an all time best Pokemon game ever made.
Yeah. All right. What's your number six?
My number six is Kirby.
Okay. I don't even think it's really that much. My number one is Kirby.
There you go.
Let's talk about Kirby.
I like this game a whole lot. I think it is my favorite Kirby game, which is, I don't like Kirby.
I do, which is why it's my number one.
Right. And I guess me saying I don't like Kirby and then having this game at number six shows you that it's a really good game.
Yeah.
My main problem with it, if I had to give a problem, is like, I think controlling Kirby, he's a very slow moving floaty guy, which is what he's supposed to be. So like, that's totally fine. But just as far as my 3D platformers go, I tend to like stuff that's more about like precise platforming as opposed to like small puzzle solving and fighting enemies.
Did you know he has a dodge that almost functions like the flurry rush in Breath of the Wild?
I don't remember. It's been a while.
Okay. Because that was something that I realized that a lot of people that I knew who played through this game were like, wait, you do what now? Because there is, I mean, it comes very in handy for some bosses of, mm-hmm. you know, you can time a dodge and then you get a slowdown and can land in a bunch of hits.
Yeah. And I liked the boss fights.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the finale in this game is incredible. Yeah. And I have a 4-year-old who likes to go to the Colosseum in this game a lot and be like, Dad, this is too hard. You play it. So I've played the bosses a lot and they have held up over time.
Yeah,
both. It's the kind of thing where it's the mixture between creative and like fun to mess around with, not necessarily like not easy, but not overbearingly difficult, which I think occupies a very good spot for Kirby. Like there's definitely certain power ups you can get. Like I looked to the Space Ranger gun. That thing, if you get it in some bosses, it's just like you charge up the triple shot and just let it go, and it just wreaks havoc. It's a fun game to play around with. Even the thing as simple as being able to freeze some of the bosses with the ice power up, which like changes those boss battles entirely.
Yeah, there's a, to borrow the Breath of the Wild term, there's some chemistry going on in this game.
Not as much. Really like fun. I feel like ice is the only one that really does that much. I think some of the other ones do impact it, but like,
but it's the fact that it's factored in, you know, like I feel like a lot of games would like that stuff just wouldn't work on the bot. They're like, no, this is a boss fight. Like you can't do that.
Yeah. And collecting Waddle Dees is fun. I like the town a lot. There's like it's the best Kirby game I think I've ever played. An incredible game.
Yep. And pretty.
Yeah. So my number five is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Shredder's Revenge. It's basically they made a new Turtles brawler and it's the best Turtles brawler that was ever made. And it has like, what, 7 playable characters or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do 6 players on one system. And it's incredible. It's so much fun to play. It is a game that, you know, doesn't, I think what you could probably sit down, play it start to finish in like 2 hours. But I've replayed those stages so many times. I've played it with friends. I've played it by myself. I've played it online. I've played it locally. It is just a blast to mess around with that game. And the music's incredible. The visuals are incredible. Like they really just, it's something that I noticed when playing Cowabunga Collection that Shredder's Revenge, like it feels like I felt playing Turtles in Time as a kid. Going back and actually playing Turtles in Time, I'm like, oh, this game is old. Playing Shredder's Revenge, like, and that's the success of this game, is that it perfectly captures the feel that those games felt like in 1992.
It feels like an arcade beat 'em up, but that's made with console sensibilities. It's not aggressively punishing, because I always feel like when I'm playing arcade beat 'em ups that either like they're extremely difficult because they want quarters out of me, but I'm playing it on a console, and so why do you want quarters out of me? Or because it's on a console, I have unlimited lives because I have unlimited quarters, and that sort of defeats the difficulty. And this one is just very well balanced to be like, it's just fun to play. Like it's not a quarter muncher, but it is still challenging, and it's just a more satisfying experience as a result. My number five is No Man's Sky, which I've already talked about a little bit, but this is one of my favorite games of all time. And so having it on Switch, even if like this port isn't 100% feature complete, which I would love to see them add back in the online stuff, because while it's not what I initially came to No Man's Sky for, it's become so much of its identity that I do feel like you kind of feel that missing. Still, having a 90% feature complete version of this game on my Switch is fantastic. And despite it being a later release this year, it's already like one of, according to my Switch year in review, it's one of my top three most played games of the year. So yeah, just a great game to have on the system. Yeah. And hopefully if I know anything about Hello Games, like this, it will get additional love. Cause they're really good about updating all of their platforms.
So my number four is Pokemon Violet, which is, instead of talking about this game at length, cause we've talked about it recently on the show, and I think it rules. It has a lot of problems, but it's a very fun game. I am instead going to use this time to briefly list what I have labeled as my port honorable mentions, because I don't factor those into my arcane personal ranking scheme. And you mentioning No Man's Sky made me think of them.
Sure.
So my five for that are Chrono Cross, Portal, the Companion Collection, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Cowabunga Collection, Atari 50, and the fifth one is the port of Dicey Dungeons to mobile.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, those are all great. So what's your number four?
My number four is Tinykin.
I need to play it. I really need to play it.
It's so, like, if you haven't seen this game, it's, imagine Mario 64, but you have Pikmin. And also kind of like almost a Paper Mario-esque art style of like a 2D character.
The art style is like very, very catching.
This game, I played it on Game Pass, but it is on Switch. And as far as I know from our review, I think the Switch version seems to run great. I love, if you like 3D platformers, it's less about like strategy than Pikmin is. Like it's definitely a 3D platformer first. But that concept of like you're going around and exploring and picking up little guys off the ground. And there are different types that do different things. And then you use them to find MacGuffins and do little quests. And it's just so fun. And also, I just love any game like where I love the concept of playing as a very small character in a very scaled up world. And this is a game that largely takes place inside of a house and you are tiny. And I just love games with that art style. So, yeah, amazing, amazing game.
My number three is Neon White, the Annapurna published game from...
I should really play that game.
I'll play Tinykin, you play Neon White. Deal?
Deal.
But Neon White is a game that it's really hard to explain. It is a speedrunning first-person deck-building game with an anime story and relationship building, and it's weird, but... The main play of this game is like sub-minute long levels from a first-person perspective where you are trying to get through them as fast as you can. There are like different goals to get along the way, but for the most part, it is you start off with like a couple, you know, cards in your hand. The cards have two functionalities. You can use them as a weapon. It'll be like, you know, a pistol or a shotgun or something like that. Or you can discard them, which will then give you some kind of maneuverability, like a double jump or a dash. It is all about chaining all of this together in like just trying to perfect your runs. I don't really like speedrunning games. I got very, very addicted to this game of just trying to get the higher, trying to like get the platinum medals on levels, trying to beat friends online. Very good online leaderboard system. And like the fact, it is one of those games too that you can do what I did and get very hung up on getting platinum medals and everything, but there's a lot of kind of things that you can do as the game opens up where there are, you know, like hidden objects to find in the levels as well that, you know, you kind of do them and it's not like you're it's not like you have like a time limit to get through a level. You can take as long as you want. So there's that kind of exploration, which some of that involves like an out of the box way of using your maneuverability to try to like get to like a high tower or something like that to get a collectible. And then there's also the interactions with the characters in between like the sets of levels that then they have their own hooks for specific levels. Like some of them, you know, will be like, well, I forget exactly. It's been, you know, a couple months since I played the game, but they do things like limit your ability to, you know, use different power-ups. Like I think one of them, like you can't fire guns, so you have to, you can only use the discarding card maneuverability stuff to get around and fight enemies. It rules. What a game.
Everyone,
man,
I've ever heard talk about this game, even people that I don't think would like it, it's like consistently a 9 or a 10. So I don't think I have any excuse not to play it. My number three is Astro Dogs.
Wow, that's high.
Yeah, well, once again, I really like this game. I will not 100% commit to my ordering. This was done very quickly while Neil was running through the first half of his list. but I really like Astro Dogs. It's developed by Digital Media Triad, a very small developer. And it's a rail line shooter, heavily influenced by Star Fox, but is also sort of a satire of Star Fox. Fantastic soundtrack that they have still not released anywhere. And the copy of the soundtrack that I have on my computer, I had to learn how to rip files directly from the game because I have it on PC because I needed the soundtrack. But yeah, it's cool because it manages to do, like, one of the things I always have trouble with in a lot of modern Star Fox likes is they tend to build, like, in order to add playtime and add depth, they tend to do like leveling systems where you earn points in the level and then you can use that to unlock better weapons and better shields for your ship. But that usually means that if you don't do well in a level, you need to go back and replay it a few times to grind to get to the point where you stand a chance in the next level. And I just don't think that's fun. And Astro Dogs does a really good job of adding things to the gameplay without ever breaking what should be a pretty much like play through it in one sitting arcade style experience. Like, there's, you have all these different abilities, and some of it is, you know, like, you know, barrel rolls and bombs and things like that. But then there's also like a laser weapon that you control using motion controls that you can just, it kind of freezes time and you can just spray around at a bunch of enemies. The barrel roll deflects shots, but it deflects them back at whoever shot them at you. So you can kind of be working on defeating one enemy and then be watching another one and flip their shot back at them and take them out while you're doing something else. And it's just a very well thought out, very cool rail shooter that I really like. And the devs behind it seem cool. I've chatted with them on Twitter a few times since it came out, and they just seem awesome. And yeah, I have no idea how the game did, but it's good and you should play it. Runs great on Switch.
All right, so I'm up for my number two, which I think is probably your number one. That would be Xenoblade Chronicles 3.
That is my number one.
I think I am at the point where I think Xenoblade Chronicles 3 is the best RPG that I have played since Chrono Cross. And not wow. This year. I mean, like
ever.
Like, since 2000, when Chrono Cross came out. Like, I it was something that I flippantly said that, like, this is the best RPG in the past 20 years. And I started to think about it. I'm like, I think it kind of is. Like, there's definitely ones that are, like, I would say even the original Xenoblade is pretty close. My I think the story in Xenoblade is still better than Xenoblade 3 story. But the battle system in Xenoblade 3 is so much better than the first game. Yeah,
from a pure gameplay perspective, yeah. It is incredible. It's way better than any of the other ones.
Yep. Just a masterpiece of a game. It looks really good on Switch. It is especially heartening to see that after Xenoblade 2 like kind of struggled to work well on Switch visually, that they just got it. They got it to work well. It looks good handheld. It looks great docked. It's just a beautiful game. And the music's incredible. I really like the characters, the story. I have not gotten to the bitter end, even though I'm 80 hours in at this point. But it's just tremendous. I adore this game. And as I'm finishing my time with Pokemon Violet, I think I'm going to kick over and try to finish off Xenoblade as kind of like the big game that I'm playing.
Yeah, it does. Even as somebody who liked Xenoblade 2, Xenoblade 3 does such a good job of course correcting everything that didn't work about Xenoblade 2.
Yeah.
Like, it feels very aware of what the critiques were and also adds legitimate new stuff. It brings stuff back from Xenoblade 1 that wasn't in Xenoblade 2. It brings some ideas from Xenoblade X that weren't in any of the mainline Xenoblade games. Like, it's always cool when you, it's going to be a weird example, but I feel this way about Assassin's Creed 2. Where it's a game where you play it and you can tell, it's like, okay, the developers of this game went to every forum where anyone was talking about the last game and just wrote everything down and then said, okay, how do we address every single one of these issues? And then did it. And you play it and you're just like, wow, like, they were listening. Like, this is great. And then they thought of stuff that I would have never even thought to mention. And like, it's just a really good sequel. Even with my complaints about the ending, like that's a small, once again, I still gave the game a 9 out of 10. Like it's an incredible game.
Yeah. So what's your number two?
My number two, which I don't know is actually my number two, but I wanted to be spicy. My number two is Last Hero of Nostalgaea.
I'm surprised you did not mention Elden Ring.
Yeah, I probably should have, huh? Was that 2022? I forget what year it is.
I was referencing that earlier because I think Elden Ring for me would be just off my 25. Like, it is the kind of thing I'm very impressed by Elden Ring. Those games still aren't for me. I just think Elden Ring is the stinking best one of those games.
Yeah. Well, yeah, honorary Elden Ring is great. I may have forgot it came out this year. Last Year of Nostalgaea is a great satire of video games at large in the form of a Souls-like. But one of the things that I really appreciate about it is while being that, it's also probably the best Souls-like I've played that isn't actually made by From Software, which is my favorite. Like, any good satire should simultaneously like be making fun of the thing while also being a really good version of the thing. It's why Galaxy Quest is such a good movie, is that it's simultaneously making fun of Star Trek while also being one of the best Star Trek movies. And that's how I feel about like Last Year of Nostalgaea is to Dark Souls what Galaxy Quest is to Star Trek. And it's just a really cool concept of like the whole game is about a world regressing into earlier states of video game graphics. And so as you're going through it, like things are changing from like 18-bit to 16-bit to kind of like N64 looking, and like the world is sort of in flux and you're seeing all of these different graphical styles. Sometimes the world is literally changing in front of you, like you see it morph. And it's just such a cool concept, and it's very funny and very self-aware, all while being a legitimately great Souls-like. I think it's on... I played it on Xbox. It's not on Switch.
Yeah, I think it's on like every console but Switch.
I'm not sure if it's on PlayStation or not. It might just be Xbox and PC.
Okay. But I can't see. I don't know.
I'm not sure. I know it's on PC. Yeah.
It's a tentative Steam Deck purchase for me at some point.
Yeah. It's the guy that made The Fall. Yeah. Who is awesome.
Over the Moon Games.
Yep. I bought it blind because he's a cool guy and I want to buy his games. And that means I'm out of games because you already did my number one. And actually, are you out? Was Kirby your number one?
Yeah.
Are we both out at two?
Yeah.
All right.
I'll rattle off real quick to finish it of my list of regret.
Do that.
So there's a list of games. I will say there's a ton from like November, December that I don't feel as bad about. But games that I'm like, oh, that'd be cool. I should play that. Deedlit and Wonder Labyrinth, Card Shark, Live Alive, which I did play a little bit of. Frogun, Cult of the Lamb, Nier Automata, Rogue Legacy 2, Bayonetta 3, Soccer Story, Retro Goal, Dragon Quest Treasures, Crisis Core, and actually a game that I did play a little bit tonight that honestly, if it came out a little later in the year, it might make the list. Little Gator Game, which is basically...
Oh, yeah, is that good?
It's very adorable. I played it with my kid tonight.
Cool.
Because it's just like a... It's much like A Short Hike is kind of like Animal Crossing, but in like a bite-sized friendly manner. This is Breath of the Wild in a bite-sized friendly manner.
Oh, cool.
Where you're just a little like a little gator doing like pretend quests. Like the enemies that you defeat with your stick are cardboard cutouts that you set up on the island before the events of the game. It's very cute. Like we got a glider, which is just like a kid's t-shirt. And you're gliding around the island and stuff. It's very adorable, fun world to explore. I look forward to playing with it more, but of course, after we played it for like 5-10 minutes, he kicked back over to his current favorite game of all time, Kirby Star Allies.
Nice. I think you might be influencing his game taste.
Maybe just a little bit. Although I will say, I think he booted up Kirby Star Allies on his own. Like, we definitely played Forgotten Land at my poking. But anyway, I think that'll do it for this week's episode of Connectivity. What were your favorite games of the year? Do you think some of our lists are insane? Are there any games that you're surprised we did not discuss? Send in all those questions and more to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. We love hearing questions. We love having listener mail. Some kind of status updates on things. Twilight Princess Game Club for a 3D Zelda Game Club that will probably be recording early January, I want to say at this point.
Probably.
We were initially,
I think we're kind of out of time for December.
Yeah, yeah. We were initially kind of aiming to do it before the end of the year, but I think it just like holiday stuff is going to probably make it hard to organize the crew.
Yeah, well, we all got busy with reviews, and I know Matt's on a substantial review right now, so...
So probably early January we'll be doing that. We'll try to give a heads up, pay attention to the Discord, to the 3D Zelda Game Club chat, where I think we'll probably be getting a little more fast and furious about it, because I think some of us are realizing that we need to play some Twilight Princess and fast to keep this game club on track. That's it. Thanks for listening, and talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye.
This was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details.